Hi, and thanks for joining me for Stories from the Phoenix New Times. I'm your Sun Sounds volunteer, Chip Hobrock. First on this week's program, parents rejoice as lawmakers avert disabilities program funding crisis. This story was written by Morgan Fisher and was posted on the Phoenix New Times website on April 24th. With a stroke of a pen on Thursday afternoon, Governor Katie Hobbs allowed 60,000 families to exhale. Hobbs signed a bill that steered a crucial government agency away from a fiscal cliff. Entering this year, Arizona's Division of Developmental Disabilities was short $122 million, with money set to run out May 1st. Without an infusion of funds, many Arizona families, particularly those that benefit from the Parents as Paid Caregivers program, which pays parents up to 40 hours a week to care for their severely disabled children, would have been left in the lurch. Instead, after months of sniping, Hobbs and Republicans in the Arizona House of Representatives struck an 11th-hour compromise Wednesday night to fund the program through June 30th. Families who depend on the DDD and the PPCG program felt that they had been given a reprieve. The community, for the first time since January 29th, has been able to take a deep breath today, said Michelle Thorne, the co-founder and CEO of caregivers advocacy group, Care for the Caregivers. I totally broke down. I was so happy that these caregivers now can take a breath and see the light at the end of the tunnel. Affected parents were hardly optimistic that the legislature would get its act together. Some, like 30-year-old Gilbert mom Alexandra Patterson, were considering moving out of state if a compromise wasn't reached. Others had to think about institutionalizing their kids. An initial Republican proposal to pay parents only up to 20 hours a week would have forced their hand. Their kids need round-the-clock care, and Arizona lacks enough medical professionals to make up the difference. That's why the PPCG program was started in the first place. We're very limited on where we can live with our children. We're limited on doctors for our children, said Bridget Ekmalin, who cares for 6 adopted and foster kids who rely on DDD services. Recent legislative maneuvering gave parents little hope. Last week, Republicans stacked a House committee with extra members to defeat a bipartisan proposal that would have blunted some of the cuts sought by Republican Representatives David Livingston and Matt Gress. Several parents who rely on DDD watched that political gamesmanship happen in person at the Capitol. Even Wednesday afternoon, with the funding deadline a week away, prospects looked grim. Lawmakers could not agree on a solution, shooting down a restrictive bill that Hobbs vowed to veto anyway. But after 4 hours of closed-door negotiations on Wednesday evening, led by Democratic Representative Nancy Gutierrez and Republican Representative Julie Willoughby, lawmakers reached a deal, passing a bill that doesn't cut parent pay while also instituting more oversight. On Thursday morning, the bill passed nearly unanimously through the Arizona Senate without amendments, landing it on Hobbs' desk by mid-afternoon. A miracle. DeBrandy Kuhn, the co-founder of the Raising Voices Coalition, which advocates for the PPCG program, the Wednesday night bargain was a miracle. She and Thorne, who uses the PPCG program to care for her 12-year-old autistic son, said Gutierrez and Willoughby deserved credit for hashing out a solution. Thorne said that the two lawmakers' names should be on that bill. Let's get that straight. The pair just wanted to make sure that families got the support that they needed. They are examples of what leaders should be. It is a really great compromise on both sides, added Kuhn, who relies on PPCG to care for her 10-year-old son with cerebral palsy. It gave the Republicans what they were asking for and doesn't harm our programs in the DDD community at the same time. After the House finally passed the bill Wednesday night, Patterson told New Times that she's glad lawmakers kind of opened their eyes to how a lack of funding could affect so many people. Now, she doesn't have to move out of state to care for her son, she said. We're definitely really grateful, said Patterson, whose 2-year-old son, Aries, was born with the rare 5q3l3 deletion syndrome and requires constant care. I'm just happy that I can keep my son home and his nursing is not going to get affected. Now that Hobbs has signed the bill to ensure DDD funding doesn't run out in 7 days, the pressure on DDD families is lifted. She and Republicans still have to negotiate the program's future in the budget for the next fiscal year and beyond, but that doesn't figure to be as protracted a battle as the one the two sides just finished. DDD families appreciate the breather. Now that there's a resolution, Thorne said, everybody can just take a deep breath and kind of regroup from the trauma that they've been through for the past 2 months. Here's an opinion and commentary piece written by Rashad Thomas of the Arizona Mirror. It was posted on the Phoenix New Times website on April 25th. Modern day Jim Crow. Phoenix still has a segregation problem. White homeowners gain millions while black and brown communities pay with their lives. Once promoted as the winter playground of the Southwest, Phoenix remains a city deeply shaped by segregation, where privilege dictates who gets to stand their ground and who is displaced, who is protected, and who is left behind. Phoenix is the 9th most gentrified city in the country, but urban revitalization is nothing more than redlining with a fresh coat of paint, another way of systematically displacing black and brown residents. It's a modern-day Jim Crow tactic, cleverly disguised as progress. The Fair Housing Act of 1968 was enacted to end these discriminatory practices, yet much like the de facto segregation of Jim Crow, gentrification still dictates who can remain and who is forced out of their community. Today, instead of train tracks, highways and light rail lines carve through neighborhoods, while real estate deals and best neighborhood websites help reinforce segregation under the guise of personal preference. In 1935, the Homeowners Loan Corporation, HOLC, drafted a residential security map, which gave us the term redlining. They became blueprints for a discrimination that rated neighborhoods from A, most desirable, to D, too risky for investment. As a result, the Federal Housing Administration, FHA, used redlining maps to decide who deserved a loan and which communities would be denied the chance to build wealth. Redlining maps ensured neighborhoods of color were locked out of home loans, funneling money into the suburbs while excluding and disinvesting in black and brown communities. Between 2012 and 2016, residential properties within half a mile of public transit nationally saw a 4% to 24% higher median sale price, while commercial properties in 4 of 7 regions experienced a 5% to 42% increase in median price per square foot, a trend that continues today. Take South Phoenix's 85042 zip code, which includes the latest extension of the light rail, where median home values have risen from $210,000 in 2012 to $465,000 today. Families near public transportation can save $2,500 to $4,400 annually, with 1 in 4 needing only one car. However, even though light rail was pitched as a way to help improve life for the black and brown people who have called that part of Phoenix home for generations, rising home prices are driving them from the area. Politicians, urban planners, and real estate companies often use diversity, equity, and inclusion, DEI rhetoric, while simultaneously displacing communities based on race, class, and power. This isn't just about property values. It's about who is allowed to belong and who is pushed out. All white Tukey. If you've lived in Phoenix long enough, you've heard the narratives. On one side of South Mountain sits Ahwatukee, derisively nicknamed All White Tukey, which is seen as a privileged safe haven, while the South Phoenix Red Line neighborhoods on the other side of the mountain, that have long been populated by mostly black and brown people, neighborhoods recently bisected by the Loop 202 expansion, are described as violent, crime-ridden, and struggling. All White Tukey is just a nickname. It's a reflection of systemic inequity sewn into the city's foundation. The Arizona Supreme Court recently awarded Ahwatukee homeowners in the Foothill Reserves $12 million in damages, including an additional $6 million for seizing common areas in the community. This comes after a long battle over claims that the controversial Loop 202 construction devalued their properties and impacted their health with increased noise, pollution, and visual obstructions. The judgment acknowledged not just financial loss, but also emotional distress due to the increased health risks. Meanwhile, black and brown communities in South Phoenix are forced to live in redlined, high-risk areas like sacrifice zones, which causes not only health risks, but causes property values to plunge, facing an onslaught of injustices with no compensation. Separate but equal was ruled constitutional in the 1896 case, Plessy v. Ferguson, cementing segregation into law. The U.S. Supreme Court claimed segregation was legal as long as facilities were equal, but in reality, they never were. Black residents were shut out of white neighborhoods unless they took on predatory loans they could never hope to repay. Even though Brown v. Board of Education in 1954 struck down separate but equal in schools, the damage was already done. Generations of black families had been denied access to quality education and locked out of homeownership, expanding the racial wealth gap and limiting social mobility. Every day, I am struck by the great migration unfolding in South Phoenix. This is not a movement driven by choice or opportunity. Instead, generations of black and brown residents are being forced out by rising home values, increasing property taxes, and the systemic closure of schools in historically minoritized neighborhoods. This isn't a new phenomenon, but a rebrand of segregation and exclusion, rooted in Jim Crow laws that once labeled South Phoenix as hazardous, a designation that justified confining black and brown communities. White banks and developers deemed it too risky for investment, while the city allowed industrial facilities like landfills, stockyards, and rendering plants into those neighborhoods, banning them from white neighborhoods. Today, black Americans are approximately 1.5 times more likely to be exposed to pollutants than white Americans due to living near industrial parks, highways, and pollution sources, bearing the brunt of environmental racism. Meanwhile, wealthier, predominantly white communities remain protected from these toxic burdens. This stark inequality exposes the systemic neglect of black and brown communities, where the cost of industrial development is paid in poor health and a diminished quality of life. Though redlining is illegal, its impact remains embedded in housing policies and urban planning. Much like de facto Jim Crow laws, modern policies and regulations, like exclusionary zoning regulations, still force black and brown communities into areas plagued by environmental hazards, underfunded schools, and economic disinvestment. Exclusionary zoning are regulations that restrict the amount and type of housing that property owners are allowed to construct on their land. One example in Phoenix is the R16 zoning code, which restricts housing density by mandating that only one single-family home can be built on lots of at least 6,000 square feet. This limits the construction of multifamily or affordable housing, making it difficult to provide denser, more affordable options, and effectively excluding lower-income residents from certain neighborhoods. Gated communities, a specific type of development, often utilize exclusionary zoning practices to restrict access and create a sense of exclusivity and safety. This can reinforce social and economic segregation, leading to a concentration of wealth and resources in certain areas, while others face disinvestment and limited opportunities. Weapons of gentrification. Highways, like Interstates 10 and 17, have long been weapons of gentrification, disrupting and displacing communities of color. The two intersect when highways and gentrification collide with neighborhood revitalization, just as historically disinvested communities begin to thrive on their own, the city steps in, claiming to support them, but instead destabilizing the ecosystem. This pattern echoes past attempts to dismantle Black progress, from Reconstruction to the Black Power movement. Robert Moses, the powerful New York City urban planner in the early 20th century, exemplified this strategy. He used highways as tools of segregation, intentionally designing roadways that cut through Black and low-income neighborhoods, displacing thousands of residents. His projects, like the Cross Bronx Expressway, not only destroyed communities, but also isolated them from access to wealthier, predominantly white areas. Moses' use of infrastructure to reinforce racial and economic divides serves as a historical parallel to current practices of gentrification and urban displacement. Where vibrant urban farming by Black and brown communities was revitalizing the area, the city disguised exploitation as progress. Just as freed slaves in the post-Civil War era were granted land to cultivate, only to have it stolen through sharecropping, the city designates these once neglected, hazardous spaces as valuable only after they begin to thrive, then swiftly takes them away. White residents, with greater access to generational wealth thanks to redlining, can afford rising property taxes and home values, while Black and brown residents in South Phoenix struggle to keep up with the increased rent and mortgage. Developers, motivated by profit, inflate costs due to rising impact fees, driving up rents and mortgages. Areas like Ahwatukee and Levine have the slowest impact, or rather have the lowest impact fees at $15,000, while Scottsdale and North Phoenix face the highest at $37,000. Despite these systemic barriers, some communities fought to defy segregation. One of the first neighborhoods to be demolished, the Golden Gate Barrio, was a historically Mexican-American community in South Phoenix that had begun breaking racial barriers. Located where Sky Harbor Airport now stands, it was one of the few places in Phoenix where integration was taking root. But this progress was cut short when the neighborhood was displaced under the guise of airport expansion. Its families were forced to relocate. Mexican Americans integrated into other neighborhoods throughout South Phoenix, reshaping the area's cultural landscape. This displacement serves as yet another example of how progress in Phoenix has often come at the expense of minoritized communities. Phoenix's segregation wasn't an accident. It was deliberately designed, reinforced through policy, and sustained by economic and environmental inequality. The language of discrimination may have changed, but its impact remains. The question is, will we allow history to keep repeating itself, or will we demand justice for the communities that continue to pay the price for Phoenix's progress? ASU's study abroad website scrubbed mentions of trans people. This next story was written by T.J. LeHeroux and was posted on April 25th. Arizona State University's Study Abroad Office, officially known as the Global Education Office, may have a beef with trans, queer, intersex, and asexual people. Sometime over the last few months, the office's website dropped a few letters from its policy advising students of being gay abroad. A webpage that was once titled LGBTQIA Students was shortened to just LGB Students sometime after January 17th, the last time the page was logged by the Wayback Machine. Notably, President Donald Trump, who has threatened universities over diversity, equity, and inclusion policies, and who has especially targeted transgender people, was inaugurated on January 20th. The activist group Students for Justice in Palestine at ASU noted the shortened page title in an Instagram post Wednesday, also pointing out that the transcribed version of the webpage also axed several links specifically for transgender people. ASU lines up to bow down to the fascist administration, the student group said in its post. Our students cannot be collateral for the destructive policies of Trump. The website title reverted to LGBTQIA Students after Phoenix New Times contacted ASU to ask about the change. A university spokesperson told New Times on Thursday that ASU had not approved that language change and would restore the old language. That change was apparently made Thursday afternoon, though the page still has the shortened acronym in its URL, and the links to trans-specific resources have not returned. It's unclear when the original change to the shortened URL and page title happened. Neither Global Education Office Executive Director Noah Rost nor Jennifer Mellerich, the Assistant Vice Provost for Academic and Global Engagement, responded to inquiries from New Times. Most of the other mentions of trans students on ASU's main website have remained. The school's Educational Outreach and Student Services sub-website includes a page for transgender resources, among several others for students who aren't straight or cisgender. The irony of the changes being made to the school study abroad program is particularly rich. The page exists to offer advice to queer students about studying abroad in countries that might be less accepting of non-straight and non-cis people. Research the LGBTQIA climate of your host country, the page suggests, adding that students should ask themselves if there are safety considerations you should be aware of in their host countries. Those queries might be better directed more inwardly. Under Trump, the U.S. government has adopted the cruel mission of erasing trans people from existence, targeting trans girls who want to play school sports with their peers, and threatening institutions that provide gender-affirming care to minors. In his inauguration speech, Trump promised to recognize people as one of two genders, male or female. In addition, the administration and its MAGA acolytes, including on the City Council of Scottsdale, have made it a major policy goal to eliminate diversity programs in government or public institutions. So far, ASU President Michael Crow has said that the university didn't need to make many changes to its policies because the school, which boasts about accepting as many students as possible, already did not have any DEI-related goals. Stephen Lemons wrote this next story that was posted on April 24th. Somebody mailed animal poop to the county attorney's home. Maricopa County Attorney Rachel Mitchell is quite often full of crap, metaphorically speaking. But now she has a really stinky situation on her hands, discovering the identity of her anonymous prankster who mailed a plastic baggie full of brown squishy stuff purporting to be animal poo to her home. On February 14th, the Phoenix Police Department dispatched two officers to Mitchell's home to investigate the alleged excrement, according to an incident report obtained by Phoenix New Times. The report states that the fecal material was in a white envelope addressed to Mitchell from an A.S. Enterprises in Allison Park, Pennsylvania. The U.S. Postal Services delivered the package to her mailbox on February 12th, per the report, which states that Mitchell's husband, Paul Stout, retrieved the package. Stout has previously identified himself as Mitchell's fiancé, an admission he made under oath last year during a court hearing in which he admitted to using burner social media accounts to attack Mitchell's critics. Mitchell has refused to comment on their relationship and has not responded to a request for poop-related comments from the New Times. But she was more forthcoming with the local constabulary. Rachel stated that she and her husband went to dinner last night, and when they got home, her husband told her there was a package at the door, the report reads. After bringing it inside, she opened it and found the bag. Mitchell advised police that after some online research into AS Enterprises and poop, here's hoping she used incognito mode, she discovered that there is a website where people can anonymously send caca to someone as a joke. She found that the sender can even select the type of poop they send, the report states. The police do not identify the site, but various sources online, including complaints to the Better Business Bureau, identify AS Enterprises as being associated with the site poopsenders.com. The site identifies itself as the ultimate gag gift and sweet revenge at its finest. Perfect for your ex-spouse, that mean boss at work, or the teacher who gave little Johnny an F in arithmetic, or that special county attorney in your life. As Mitchell told police, pranksters can choose cow dung, elephant crap, gorilla poop, or the combo pack, described as all three in one big nasty mess. But the authenticity of the goods may be suspect, given a statement on the company's FAQ page about whether its shit is real. Only the mad scientist that packs this stuff in the back room knows for sure, and he wouldn't tell us. But we do know this, it really smells bad back there. He is mixing up shit, and he does visit the local dairy farm and zoo about twice a week, the site reads. We also don't want the delivery company to know what kind of shit they're delivering. We can assure you that it looks nasty and really stinks. It will get the point across to your intended victim. Poop Senders did not respond to a request for comment, but the Phoenix Police Report states that officers contacted a local U.S. postal inspector who advised them that it was a prank website that people can use to send fake poop, with no way to track it. The report notes that the USPS declined investigation due to the prank. Mitchell, however, told Phoenix police that she desired prosecution and provided footage from her home Ring cameras. The report states that police are investigating the incident for the possible offense of harassment by communication, though no statute is cited. Cutting the crapola. But who, oh who, would want to send anonymously the county attorney a breadless shit sandwich? Other than everyone her office has prosecuted, that is. Asked this question, Mitchell told the cops that, off the top of her head, there was this suspended attorney named Vladimir Gajic, who had been harassing her husband, though Gajic still believes him to be her fiancé. Gajic was the only person Mitchell mentioned by name, though she also said her office recently had to turn down an animal abuse case that angered some people, and that there had been pro-Palestinian groups protesting, likely a reference to her office charging protesters at Arizona State University with trespassing. She also complained about a silver SUV she believed had been stalking the house and provided the license plate number to police, according to the police report. The cops ran the plate. Gajic is not the vehicle's owner. Reached by phone, Gajic denied he had anything to do with Mitchell's Mierda and said he has not been contacted by the police over the fecal matter. But given his ongoing legal feud with Stout, which New Times reported on last year, Gajic's not surprised Mitchell name-checked him to police. I'm living inside her head now, apparently rent-free, he cracked, saying that Mitchell dragging him into it is par for the course. She calls the cops for fucking fake poop? Really? He asked. Is that the best use of law enforcement resources in the county? Last year, Stout and Gajic were involved in a prolonged verbal smackdown on X, where Gajic began speculating that Stout had been sparring with him under various sock puppet identities. With Mitchell's assistance, Stout filed an injunction against harassment on Gajic, claiming he was intimidated by Gajic's caustic posts and Gajic's dare to possibly meet him for fisticuffs. Gajic unsuccessfully challenged the injunction at a hearing in September, during which Stout admitted to using burner accounts on X to lob insults at Mitchell's political rivals and critics. Gajic appealed the lower court's decision to uphold the injunction, but the appellate court has yet to rule. Meanwhile, Stout's been busy kvetching to the cops about Gajic insulting him on X. Stout also complained to the police when a New Times reporter called Stout asking for a comment. For her part, Mitchell has demanded that the State Bar of Arizona disbar Gajic, though Gajic was suspended by the bar in 2023 and is unlikely to be allowed to practice law again. Gajic first learned of the poo mailing after requesting all police reports mentioning his name. He cited the report in an April 19th filing with the Arizona Court of Appeals, in which he accuses Stout of being the scat sender in an effort to frame him. Stout has failed to file an answering brief in the matter, but the appeals court declined to rule in Gajic's favor on that basis. Stout expects the court to sit on my appeal forever, Gajic writes in his filing, thereby denying my right to justice and due process. Stout has not responded to a voicemail message from the New Times seeking his side of the story. Remember that if you missed any of the stories in this program or any other Sun Sounds programs, you can listen to them on demand. Just go to sunsounds.org and click on Broadcast Info and Audio. Then click on Demand Podcasts, scroll down to the program you're interested in, and click on Listen. The program continues now with the cover story from this week's print edition of the New Times. It was written by Benjamin Leatherman and posted on the New Times website on April 23rd. Uncanny Valley: Why Phoenix Has Become a Laboratory for an Invasion of Robots. On a recent Wednesday night, a battle of man versus machine plays out near Tempe Town Lake. On one side, three dude bros in their early 20s. On the other, a pair of 3-foot-tall black and white DAX security robots. The robots sternly inform the men that they're trespassing on the IDEA Tempe campus after the trio rode their one wheels onto the property. In the middle is Adam Pioth, playing the role of peacekeeper. He's talking the guys down and trying to prevent them from punting either bot's plastic head. Just don't kick their heads, Pioth says. He's successful. The tense moment is diffused. Minutes later, everyone is all smiles, including the robots. These particular security automata are known as DAX robots, stout little machines with treaded wheels, googly digital eyes, and a charming kid movie vibe that makes them look like they rolled straight out of a Pixar film. According to their maker, Oregon robotics company DaxBot, they've even been mistaken for the offspring of EVE and WALL-E. Totally unintentional, the the company swears. Play nice, and their eyes turn into hearts or smiles. Trespass on the property they're monitoring, and they'll fire off a firm warning, though it's hard to take too seriously coming from bots this cute. A trio of Dex robots have been patrolling the IDEA Tempe campus since earlier this year, when they were brought in by Phoenix-based Transcend Security Solutions through a partnership with DaxBot. Pioth, a Tempe resident and founder of the local cannabis social group AZ Smoking Team, has a soft spot for the bots. "I got this weird empathy for robots," Pioth says. "It's like with a dog or certain animals. If I saw someone kicking a dog, I'd stop him. I used to joke around, but I could probably fall in love with a robot. It's weird to even say that, but not now." Since discovering the Dax robots in February, he's visited the property dozens of times to interact with his bot buddies. He's also posted 20 Instagram videos of their interactions, two of which went viral, racking up a combined 9 million views. In one, Pioth smokes pot in front of the bot. In the other, he playfully hides from its view and places a sticker on its chassis. Pioth says his robot fascination developed in recent years, coinciding with the rise of service bots and autonomous vehicles that have emerged in the valley. "I've always been obsessed with self-driving cars and stuff like that," Pioth says. "It's pretty cool, right? Sounds pretty neat, like, whoa, the future is now." As Pioth walks away from the IDEA Tempe campus, his day takes a sudden turn. Two Tempe cops roll up and question him. Someone has accused him of damaging the Dax robots and trespassing on the property, which is owned by the Boyer Company, a Phoenix commercial real estate developer. The police tell him not to return. "I've never damaged them, ever. If anything, I've stopped violence against it," Pioth later tells Phoenix New Times. "Yeah, I blew smoke at it, but it's a robot. It doesn't have lungs." Pioth is heartbroken, but defiant. Like a newly divorced dad determined to see his robo-kids, he plans to stick to a nearby public walking path alongside Tempe Town Lake and the campus. "I can record on the sidewalk, so I will be back," he says. "Or there are more out there. I can build a bond with another robot." He's got plenty to choose from. Metro Phoenix is becoming home to more service robots, driverless vehicles, and other automata than in past years. Sky Harbor Airport is the first in the world, where an automated car can pick you up curbside. Arizona State University's Tempe campus is a testing ground for delivery bots, and has the medical bills to prove it. And if you squint, you might see a drone buzzing up to your porch to drop off your latest impulse buy. If you haven't bonded with a robot yet, just wait. They're coming to make your acquaintance. Rise of the bots. Companies like Waymo, Amazon, and DoorDash are using local streets, sidewalks, and skies to test their services and tech. Bots are bringing us food at restaurants or with delivery drones. Robo mops are cleaning up after us, while security droids like Dax are monitoring properties. Steve Kane, a service robot consultant with Pringle Robotics in Chandler, says awareness in the cleaning and waiter bots sold by the company has more than doubled in the past 2 years. "Our phones have been ringing constantly, and it feels like we're in an upswing," he says. "There's been a 40% to 50% increase in interest from restaurants. Not all of them are buying, but they're interested." Why, fellow carbon-based life forms, has the Valley become a robo-haven? Henny Amore, associate professor with ASU's School of Computing and Augmented Intelligence, says favorable weather and other incentives have enticed companies to use the Valley as a robot lab. Phoenix has started to be known as an optimal place to run pilot programs where you try out autonomous robots, Amore says. one of the main reasons for the initial success with autonomous driving was the weather here, and basically the urban planning here with everything on a grid. Local laws and politics have played a role too, he adds, including a 2018 bill introduced by then-state Representative Kelly Townsend that granted autonomous robots the same rights as pedestrians. That sort of incentivized these companies to come here, and it really mostly started with Waymo coming to Phoenix, Amore said. In turn, Waymo, the autonomous ride-sharing service that launched its pilot program in Phoenix in 2022, has been a game-changer for service robots here, along with Starship Technologies' food delivery drones, which arrived at ASU in 2020. Their success here speaks to other tech companies, and that's a really good thing for Arizona, Amore said. It shows we're leading the world in adopting robotics. People from all over the world come here to try out things like Waymo cars and Starship food delivery robots. If you're ferried home from the bar in a driverless robot car or receiving your lemon pepper wings via delivery bots, you may wonder, are robots coming for your job? The short answer is, maybe. Money can drive robot adoption, Kane says. Financial uncertainty, rising inflation, and labor shortages following the pandemic all have fueled moves to bring robots up to speed. That's what we're seeing in some of the robotics being bought in the U.S. Bottom-line-centric thinking, where we can save money, he says. Kane adds that robots are ultimately doing mainly menial work. That could mean fewer human workers in certain roles. Robots do the three D's, the dirty, the dangerous, and the dull jobs, he says. Even with my robots, we need humans to fix it, maintain it, to clean it, to update it. Even the servicing robot you see, you need someone to put the food on it. I need someone to charge it. I need someone to replace the wheels. If it comes down to it, if you have a company with 100 people, technically, I'm probably getting rid of your worst part-time employees. But no, I'm not reinventing the workflow. Amore says such fears are a natural reaction to robots. It's sort of the fears of the population, Amore says. These cars will take over already crowded streets or reduce the number of Uber drivers. But again, here in Arizona, I think so far the perception has been mostly a positive one, that these services are not yet to a point where they are invading or really providing major risks. The future is now. Amore says many of the service robots that have emerged in the valley in recent years are of a cute or personable nature to help be embraced more easily by users. They want them to be accepted, he says. When you summon a Waymo, you're actually stepping into a white Jaguar I-Pace tricked out with tech. You feel like a sleek, cool future includes you. The success of these early forays into Valley robot tech portends more ahead, Amore says. There's major investment in the area, and ASU has become a hub attracting more companies, he says. What started with just Waymo and Uber has grown to include 8 or 9 types of service robots on streets, in restaurants, and delivering packages. If that trend continues, we'll be seeing a lot more of them around. The future is now. If you're in the valley, you have perhaps the best chance of anyone in the hemisphere to encounter a robot on your daily rounds. Here are the robots you're most likely to find in the wild. Cleaning robots. Custodial robots are already hard at work all over the valley. You're just not likely to catch them in action. Devices like the CCI, mobile sweeping, scrubbing, vacuuming, and mopping bot made by China-based Pudu Robotics, typically do their dirty work after hours or out of sight in warehouses and industrial buildings. So while they're definitely on the job, they're keeping a low profile and a shiny floor. It's kind of like those Roombas that you have at home, Kane says. Our robots are just a little more sophisticated and can do an entire building, warehouse, or apartment complex. They dump the water. They fill themselves. Cleaning robots are sweeping up pickleball courts now, Kane says. But, again, these are during overnights. You go there during the day, you will just be sitting in a corner. Kane says the growing use of robots in custodial work is due to companies dealing with staffing issues and labor shortages. He says some jobs may be lost, but sees an opportunity for humans to better themselves. Humans are smarter than pushing brooms and mops and riding floor scrubbers, Kane says. He doesn't expect robots to fully supplant human cleaners, though. It's hard to predict because everything is constantly changing, but this world is built for humans, Kane says. There's a lot of stairs, and robots can't go upstairs smoothly, unless it's one of those four-legged things. Starship Technologies food delivery robots. During the darkest days of the pandemic, Arizona State University's Tempe campus was invaded by robots. In 2020, a fleet of 40 autonomous food delivery drones from San Francisco's Starship Technologies began bringing meals from on-campus eateries straight to students' doorsteps. The six-wheeled robots quickly became a campus favorite. They made social distancing easier during peak COVID, they were convenient, and they brought a dose of whimsy to pandemic doldrums. The microbus-shaped bots were downright adorable. That charm, says Amore, helped the campus warm to them. They look like little Volkswagens, he says. Most of the time, when I've seen people interact with them, they think they're cute. Until they weren't. In 2024, a Starship robot suddenly reversed outside a campus parking garage and collided with an ASU employee, sending her to the ground and causing a 4-inch cut on her arm and lower back trauma, before attempting to hit her again. The company reached out to provide insurance info and promo codes, because nothing says sorry like a free sandwich. Later, they told the media that the robot had detected an oncoming vehicle. Bellabot. The internet loves cats, always has, always will. So it's no surprise this feline-inspired restaurant droid, manufactured by China's Pudu Robotics, started popping up on social media after debuting at Valley Eateries in recent years. With its kawaii-style animated face, purring sounds, and the unshakable confidence of a cat that owns the room, the Bellabot brings the charm. Patrons can even scratch behind its ear to trigger a positive reaction from the bot. Described as a Roomba with shells, the column-shaped robot cruises around local spots delivering plates at eateries, including Thai Recipe Bistro, and all three Kura revolving sushi bar locations. Kane says it's best suited for fast casual restaurants or businesses dealing with staff shortages, but that hasn't stopped local bar owners from wanting one just for the novelty. Some of the bars were like, bring one over to my place for St. Patrick's Day. We'll trick it out in all this green stuff. It's not really for that, Kane says. It's for the days when employees don't show up and they need this thing to send out food and come back. If you're already killing it with big crowds, you don't need a robotic server. It can't really get around all these people. Kedibot. Pudu's Kedibot is basically a rolling billboard with a side hustle as a restaurant and event host. The tall automaton is equipped with a giant touchscreen that can display ads or greetings, or just silently judge your formal wear choices. It's more of a hosting bot. You follow it to get to your table, it spins around, you get the silverware, and it goes back to the hostess stand, Kane says. It couldn't even deliver food to a foretop. You can also spot it at more upscale establishments around town, and it serves the upwardly mobile at highfalutin fundraisers and soirees. When there's big events in ballrooms, we bring it, Kane says. We had it at a fundraiser with the ALS Foundation in Scottsdale, filled with waters and beers, and ran around the lobby the whole night. Amazon Prime Air Drones. At this point, if a human can do it, Amazon's figuring out how a robot can do it faster, and without needing a piss bottle. The company's fulfillment centers, including all 17 in Arizona, buzz with bots that assist with sorting, lifting, and moving packages. And as of last month, Amazon's Prime Air drones are back in action, hauling parcels and late-night impulse buys across West Valley skies. In January, its autonomous MK-30 fleet was briefly grounded due to a few crashes and technical hiccups, but are again zipping around a 7-mile radius of the Tolleson Fulfillment Center. Picture futuristic carrier pigeons, only with GPS, spinning rotors, and a talent for dropping dog food weighing 5 pounds or less on your porch in under 30 minutes. Not everyone sold on the service. As one West Valley resident told KTVK TV Channel 3 earlier this year, what if it hit a cat or a pet, or even landed on your car? It could be dangerous. Fair point. Parker. Don't let its resemblance to an oversized sex toy fool you. Parker, the Nightscope K5 autonomous security robot, is all business. Standing around 5'5" and clocking in at 420 pounds, this glossy white automaton roams Park Central with purpose. Armed with cameras, thermal imaging, sonar, LIDAR, license plate recognition, and other surveillance gear, Parker maintains round-the-clock vigilance of the sprawling property. First introduced in 2021 by Transcend Security Solutions, which is contracted to patrol the mixed-use development and former Midtown Phoenix Mall, the Robo Rent-A-Cop doesn't take coffee breaks or naps. It just rolls along, scans everything in sight, and quietly watches your questionable parking job. Bill Cook, a senior vice president with property owner Plaza Companies, says the robot has been a big hit with Park Central's tenants and visitors. People love Parker, he says. They've taken selfies with it because they're so intrigued. Parker hasn't been abused over the past 4 years, at least IRL. As for online, not so much. Shortly after its debut, Parker was promptly roasted on the Phoenix subreddit, with users calling it Suppositron 9000, or comparing it to the killer security robots in the 1986 slasher film Chopping Mall. Hybrid mobility robot. Picture an aerial drone trapped inside one of those ball-shaped atlaspheres from American Gladiators, and you've got the hybrid mobility robot, an all-terrain automaton engineered by Scottsdale-based startup Revolut Robotics. Equal parts rover, drone, and metallic hamster ball, the robot is designed for inspection, surveillance, and search and rescue in hostile and cramped environments. Read, collapsed tunnels, condemned buildings, or somewhere deep in enemy territory. The coolest part? It can also navigate any surface and transform into flight mode at the flip of a joystick. The brainchild of Revolut co-founders Colin Taylor, a robotics industry veteran, and Sahand Sabet, an engineer who previously worked at JPL, the HMR is aimed at saving lives. Our primary motivation is keeping humans out of harm's way, Taylor told Wired in 2023. Taylor tells Phoenix New Times, the company, which was invited to showcase the HMR at Amazon's ReMars conference last year, is now preparing to deploy the robot for pilot testing and collecting and validating data ahead of building and releasing the final product. Dex Robots. Despite what RoboCop might have led you to believe, the future of AI-powered security isn't a tyrannical killbot like ED-209. At least not until our current timeline skews even darker. Instead, it's more friendly-faced machines like the Dax robot, compact, wheeled, and more like a Disney-esque sidekick than a dystopian enforcer. Miriam Sullivan, marketing director for DeckSpot, says that was baked into the company's robots from the beginning. The idea behind Docks was more or less that robots are going to be in the future, and we have some ability to affect that, she says. It's the direction we want to see that going, instead of something that's threatening or unpleasant to have in people's public spaces. When describing the design of the Dax robot, Sullivan unintentionally echoes the sci-fi novel The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and its description of robots as your plastic pal who's fun to be with. Sullivan says DaxBot modeled some of its robots' behaviors, heart eyes, head tilts, after the way dogs interact with people. Some of its moves are autonomous responses, while others are triggered by human operators at DaxBot's headquarters in Oregon. Operators take over when there's higher decisions to be made, but that's not necessarily an operator. It also does some levels of human-robot interaction just on its own, Sullivan says. If it's answering higher-level questions, it's probably an operator. As for comparison to WALL-E or any other Pixar character, she says they're unintentional, despite the DaxBot website describing a movie-type robot. And that brings us to the end of this week's program. Thanks very much for listening to Stories from the Phoenix New Times. Please stay tuned for additional interesting programs. I'm your Sun Sounds volunteer, Chip Holbrook.